Chapter 2
Can I try it?
Becca asked Haywan.
I've actually cracked one of these before. Yes.
Haywan answered.
Brilliant.
Becca nodded and moved to take the briefcase, but the blue-eyed Korean placed a hand on the blonde's arm.
Wait, maybe it has dye packs or something.
Haywan warned.
Maybe you should take some precautions. Why would the brigadier have added dye packs?
Becca asked.
So they will know that someone opened the case.
Haywan explained.
And ruined everything inside? That doesn't seem bloody likely.
Still, I said as I studied the briefcase, it wouldn't hurt to take precautions.
And what do you propose I do?
Becca sighed.
It's not like I can stand 10 feet away to pick the lock.
The Brit was right, and after a moment, I set the case on the ground and then backed away. Haywan joined me, and the two of us watched from a safe distance as the blonde went to work. Becca studied the lock and then dug a Swiss Army knife from her pack. A few minutes later, there was a click, and the blonde carefully lifted the lid. No cloud of color appeared, and no alarm sounded in the still air.
It's safe,
Becca announced.
There are papers in here and a flash drive. Some sort of medical swabs in those little plastic containers all marked with different dinosaur names. Looks like a lot of reports, spreadsheets, probably everything Walston's collected on the dinosaurs so far.
That does sound important, I conceded as Haywan and I rejoined Becca.
The swabs would have DNA samples,
Haywan said, as she peered at the contents of the case.
Looks like some blood samples as well. There's a handwritten letter here. The envelope hasn't been sealed.
It must be from Walston to the base commander, I replied, as I accepted the letter. I wonder what he has to say that he didn't want to put in an email. I opened the envelope and pulled out 2 sheets of plain paper. I checked the signature on the last page and confirmed it had been written by Walston. I went back to the beginning and started to read, and I felt a wave of emotion sweep over me as I did. Anger, frustration, and fear all surged through me, and I finally had to lean against the wall while I sorted through the information I just read.
Jason?
Haywan asked.
What?
Becca added.
What does it say? Is it really that bad?
There's a lot here, I said. But to start, Walston is worried that the station will run out of supplies soon. He talks about the food and water situation, but also ammunition, clothing, fuel, you name it. He's not sure how much longer they'll be able to hold the line. He's also worried that if the order comes to leave, some of the soldiers will decide to go home instead of moving on to the next assignment.
They wouldn't,
Becca said quickly. They might, I said, if the situation looks hopeless.
But the British Army doesn't just cut and run,
Becca insisted.
Stiff upper lip. That's who we are.
Mentioning Dunkirk didn't seem like a good idea at the moment, though admittedly that had also been under impossibly difficult circumstances, not unlike what was happening now. They're people, I pointed out. People with families. Look how determined you've been to reach your mom.
They're soldiers,
Becca replied.
But if they can't keep the power station going, and the government gives up on the other infrastructures it was protecting, they may think there isn't any reason to be a soldier anymore,
Haywan said. And Walston does say that some will leave, not all, I added. I can't imagine Corporal Grant running away.
That's true,
Becca agreed.
What else does it say?
Haywan asked. He mentions some studies the government has been conducting on the dinos, I said. That's what all these samples are for. They're trying to link them to known dinosaurs, but the DNA on at least some of the dinos appears to have been altered.
How is that possible?
Haywan asked. Well, that's where we get to the really interesting part of the letter, I said. Walston asks if the commander has had a chance to talk to his friend in the German army yet, and if they're seeing the same results. Walston then says he was able to reach someone at CERN briefly, and the CERN guy confirmed that the number of portals is expanding rapidly rather than fading away.
We thought that was true,
Haywan remarked. Yes, and we weren't the only ones wondering why these portals were opening, I said. The folks at CERN have been able to do some studies of their own. They think the portals are artificial, that someone's creating them.
We were right,
Becca gasped.
Do they know who or why?
No. But they think activating the super collider may have been the signal that triggered the attack.
Well, damn.
Yeah, damn. It was nice to have some answers, or at least good theories on what was happening. But like so many answers, it also raised more questions. Like, who was behind this? And why had smashing neutrinos been a red flag to someone? And maybe, most importantly, was there any way to stop this? I stared at the pages in my hand without really seeing them, and then glanced at the other contents. At least someone was still trying to find a way to fight back, and the samples and data that Walston had collected could be an important part of that fight. I folded the letter, tucked it neatly back into the envelope, and then handed it to Becca. "We'll take it," I said. "They need this information, and maybe we can learn something else from this guy about what they're doing at CERN." The girls both nodded, and then Becca repacked the briefcase. The blonde made sure to restore anything to its proper place, and then she closed and locked the bag and handed it to me. I returned it to my pack and then looked around the abandoned fish and chips place. "We won't linger," I said. "Once we get to Scampton, we won't get sucked into staying for several days to help out."
"You are worried about all the portals?"
Heywan noted. "This whole countryside could be flooded with dinosaurs soon," I said. "I'd like to be in Ravenscar and find somewhere safe, then still be on the road."
"Well, if we make it by the end of the day, we should at least stay overnight,"
Becca said.
"I still don't think traveling at night is a good idea. Look what happened when we left Coates."
"Sure, we can stay one night," I agreed. "But we're not rescuing any more engineers or whatever."
"But what if they have pilots that need to be rescued?"
Heywan teased.
"Or, I don't know, lots of cute kiddos who have been trapped in their school,"
Becca added. "During the Easter holiday, not likely." We climbed back onto our bikes, checked for dinos in the area, and then pulled back onto the A-15. We turned north, and I was happy to see that the road looked clear. We were between major cities, and the traffic hadn't been that heavy on the day of the attack, at least not on the stretch we were on. There were a few scattered cars and an empty delivery van, but we made good time for once, and no large lizards appeared to slow us down. We were the only travelers on the road until we reached the exit for a place called Threakingham. I was puzzling over the name and how to pronounce it when we saw a group of motorbikes approaching from the opposite direction. I did a quick count and came up with 13 bikes and 20 people, one of the largest groups we'd encountered since we left Cambridge.
"What should we do?"
Heywan asked as she slowed. "I'm not sure," I admitted. The other group of riders had slowed as well, and then stopped. We eyed each other from about 20 feet away, and I noticed that most of the people had the same black leather motorcycle jackets, no doubt with the same gang emblem emblazoned on the back.
"We are on police bikes,"
Becca pointed out.
"Maybe they'll leave us alone."
"Because we so look like police officers," I snickered.
"We have the guns,"
Heywan said. "Can you see if they have any?" I asked, as I tried to pick out a handgun or a rifle among the lot.
"Not sure,"
Becca replied.
"That fat guy with a bandana over his nose might have a gun under his jacket, or just a really large roll of fat."
"Is there an etiquette to this?" I asked. "Should we just try to ride around them?" One of the other bikes slowly rolled forward and stopped about 10 feet from us. The bike was a big, noisy, black Harley Davidson with high handlebars and wide tires. The rider wore the same leather jacket, faded jeans, and dark sunglasses as the rest of the gang. And the only distinguishing feature was his chest-long black beard.
"What are you doing out here?" the man demanded.
"Just heading north," I replied.
"What about yourselves?"
The question seemed to throw him for a moment, and he cocked his head to one side while he tried to decide what to say next.
"We're heading to our headquarters," the man finally said.
"Oh, well, good luck then," I said. "We ran into some flying dinos south of Bourne, and Peterborough is a bit of a mess right now, between the military and some really big dinos. What about you? Did you run into anything on your way here?" Not that I really expected an answer, but I hoped that playing the part of the helpful fellow traveler might keep us from a biker war. It also didn't hurt that the girls had brought their rifles around, and I could tell that the apparent leader had noticed that, even if I couldn't see his eyes.
"Looks like you've done some shopping," the man noted. "I'd like to know where."
"Here and there," I said with a shrug. I noticed two of the bikers slowly reach for their own weapons, and as Becca had suspected, the fat man with the bandana had a pistol. I kept my hands on my bike, though I had a bad feeling that we were about to get in a shootout with a gang, and I had no idea what to say that would keep that from happening.
Jason!
Heiwan called out.
Porto!
I heard the sizzle at the same moment and glanced toward my left. A long, dark gash in the height of a 3-story building had appeared in the field, and a moment later it widened to reveal a steamy jungle. 2 20-foot dinos stood just on the other side of the portal, and the pair were soon joined by a third and then a fourth large dino. The pack were all the same, with rust-brown skin covered in scales and bumps, a heavy, short-snouted head topped with a horn above each eye, tiny forelimbs and legs that were built for speed. For a moment, it looked like the dinos wouldn't step through, but one of them made a low cackling sound, and the foursome surged forward with awesome speed. I heard the automatic fire from the girls' guns even as I swung my own rifle around, but I'd never seen any dinos move as fast as this group. The group descended on us with their mouths wide open and ready to snap down on anyone unlucky enough to be in the way. I caught a glimpse of razor-sharp teeth, and then I opened fire with my open weapon. The portal winked out with a pop and a few sparkles, but we were well into the battle by then, and I barely registered that it had closed. The 4 dinos were ridiculously fast, and even though I had managed to land a few shots along the side of one dino's neck, it sprinted away before I could blink and was snapping at the other group of bikers. One man was knocked from his bike and tried to scuttle away, but the dino gave chase. I saw the man with the bandana raise his pistol and fire, but the dino barely registered the hit. I took my own shots and saw the first bullet nail the speedy lizard between the jaw and the neck. The creature cackled and looked in my direction, and I quickly squeezed off a second shot. That one hit higher, just behind the eye, and a spurt of blood rained down on the biker as the dino reeled back. It shook its head as if it were trying to dislodge something, and then it looked around for its victim. It started to lunge forward again just as I pulled the trigger for my 3rd shot, and this time I saw the bullet smack between the 2 horns. Everything froze for a moment, and then the dino fell forward with its mouth still open. It landed with a heavy thud across the biker and 2 other bikes, which were quickly abandoned by their riders.
"Shit!"
the leader yelled as he tried to hack at one of the dinos with a machete. A woman had tumbled from the back of one of the bikes and had curled up on the road. The leader with the machete was the only thing that stood between the woman and the dino, and the dino looked to be winning. The dino finally lost patience, and when the leader tried to move in for another strike, it lashed out with its tail and knocked him to the ground. With 2 potential dinners to decide between, the dino took a moment to consider its options, then whipped its head around to snap at the woman as she tried to slip away.
"Oh, shit,"
I muttered as I fired a quick shot. I aimed for the head, though there was barely time to do that much, given how quick the dino was. The bullet hit high on the neck, and I saw blood start to drip out even as I fired a quick second round. Thankfully, the woman had stopped moving, so the dino stood still for just a moment. It was all I needed as I lined up a 3rd shot, even as the 2nd shot plowed into the dino's side. The 3rd shot hit just as the dino clamped around the woman, but before it could fully close its jaws. The woman screamed, the 3rd round plowed through the dino's skull, and blood sprayed across the road all at the same time. The dino made a last huffing noise before it fell onto its side. There was a whimpering sound from the dino's mouth, and then the woman pulled herself out slowly as she tried to avoid impaling herself on the long row of pointed teeth. I realized then that I couldn't hear any more gunfire, and I looked around the road. Becca and Heiwan had both leapt from their bikes and had opened fire on the other 2 dinos. The last members of the lizard quartet were sprawled along the edge of the road near an old emergency phone. I noticed one of the other bikers, a man with a short gray beard and a bright purple shirt, had produced a 9mm which he pointed at the 2 dino bodies.
"Was that it?"
I called out to my companions.
"Was it just those 4?
"That was all I saw,"
Becca called back.
"That was it,"
Heiwan agreed.
"Did we lose anyone?"
one of the bikers asked. The biker gang, which I now saw was part of the Winos Club group, started to count their numbers and help other members of the gang get back on their feet and right the motorbikes. I could see some injuries among the bikers, and 2 people seemed to be losing a lot of blood. The woman who had nearly been eaten was covered in dinosaur spit and brains, but otherwise looked okay. That just left the biker under the fallen dino, who was currently cursing up a storm while his fellow bikers tried to figure out how to free him.
"Do you need medical supplies?" I asked, as I helped the leader stand up. "We have some gauze and some antibiotics we could spare for anyone who might need it."
"We have a few supplies," the leader replied, "but we could do with a hand."
"Let me grab some stuff," I said.
"And I imagine your friend there might want to rinse off. There's no telling what kind of bacteria might be inside a dinosaur's mouth."
"There's a chicken place just off the exit with a decent loo," the leader replied. "I'll take her there and see that she gets cleaned up."
"We'll stay until you get back," I replied. "Maybe we can figure out how to roll that dinosaur body off your friend in the meantime."
The leader walked over to the trembling woman, and after a quiet conversation, he wrapped his arm around her shoulder and led her back to his bike. He managed to get it upright, and then he pulled her onto the back. He talked to another biker for a moment, and I saw the leader nod in my direction, and then the leader drove toward the road to Threakingham. I returned to my own bike then and found that Hei Wan was there already. The Korean had grabbed some medical supplies while Becca handed a canteen of water to a woman sitting on the road.
"If you'll help with the injured," I said, "I'll see if we can free the guy trapped under the dino."
"I'm surprised he's still alive,"
Hei Wan murmured.
"I think the dino landed more on the bike than him, but that may not bode well for his leg, if he was on it."
Hei Wan nodded and then trotted away to help a man with a bleeding scalp. Becca gave me a thumbs up when I looked her way, and I decided to turn my attention to the trapped biker. Three members of the Winos Club were lined up next to the dinosaur, and though they leaned into the corpse with their shoulders and pushed as hard as they could, the dino barely budged. It did, however, set off another round of cursing from the trapped biker.
"I'm not sure rolling it off is such a good idea," I said as I walked up. "We might crush your friend."
"Yeah, and what would you suggest?"
one of the bikers asked in a not-so-friendly voice.
"If we have enough people, we could lift it a few times," I said. "Just long enough for someone to pull your friend out."
"That might work,"
one of the other men said, as he scratched his brown beard.
"Listen to the yank,"
the biker yelled from beneath the dinosaur.
"I don't want to be crushed to death by one of these rotters."
The third man whistled, and every member of the gang turned to look at him.
"Every man that can move, get over here,"
the third man ordered. The Winos Club members quickly obeyed, and after a quick discussion, the men arranged themselves around the dead dinosaur while the scrawniest member of the group sat down on his haunches near the head of the trapped biker. The whistling man did the countdown, and on the count of three, we all lifted with every bit of strength we had. It wasn't much, but we managed to lift the dino body just enough that the scrawny biker could grab his fellow Winos Club biker and pull him free. I could hear the denim rasp against the road, and then the scrape of metal.
"Jesus, Joseph and Mary!"
one of the men grunted after several seconds.
"I know Georgie's no lightweight, but you must have him by now."
"Okay, we're good,"
the scrawny man replied. We let go of the dino body, and it fell back to the ground with a splat. We were close enough that I could feel the earth shake with the impact, and every man there was rolling his shoulders or shaking his wrists. I noticed then that Georgie wasn't the only thing that had been rescued. Two of the Harleys had been freed as well, though the tire was bent on one and had likely seen its last mile.
"Where's Bob?"
Georgie asked as he looked around.
"With Dave,"
the scrawny man said.
"Went to get cleaned up."
"How about you?"
the whistling man asked. "Can you stand?"
It didn't bite me or such,"
Georgie replied.
"But I think my ankle was broke."
"Can you ride?"
someone else asked.
Maybe,"
George said, though he sounded doubtful. "You should go to a doctor," I said, "and get that set. You'll probably need to get some antibiotics and such for anyone else who was injured."
"Not sure where we can find one," the scrawny man mused. "Maybe Doc Winthrop is still in business, and we'll have to go that way anyway."
"You'll have to ride on the back, Georgie, if we're going that far,"
another man added.
"But since we're short a couple of bikes now, it'll work out."
"I'm not riding on the back,"
Georgie insisted, then grimaced when he tried to move his foot.
"Yeah, you are,"
the whistling man replied.
"And here comes Dave to confirm it."
I looked up to see the leader was back with the woman. She was pretty, with short brown hair and dark blue eyes, and enough piercings to give a TSA agent a heart attack. She was still pale, and I noticed she had a firm grip on Dave, but at least she wasn't covered in yellow dinosaur spit, gray brain matter, and dried blood anymore. She'd found a pair of sweatpants and an oversized t-shirt to change into, and I wondered if there was a sports store near the chicken place.
Georgie, you're alive!
She said happily, as Dave came to a stop near us.
It'll take more than a dino flopping on me to kill me,
Georgie agreed.
Though I think my ankle's in the crapper.
He should see a doctor, I said. I don't know where the closest one is.
We know someone, Dave said.
We can see if he's still working.
Or still alive,
someone added.
Listen, Dave said. We don't usually ride with non-members. But these are strange times, and you did us a solid with those dinosaurs. You can ride with us, if you like.
Thanks, but we're heading north, I replied.
So are we, Dave said. We made it as far as Holdingham, and then we ran into some soldiers.
Had the old town blocked off and wouldn't let us through and wouldn't let us go around.
To be honest, I'm not sure they were real soldiers.
No, that's not quite right. They were soldiers, but I'm not sure they were under government orders.
You think they abandoned their posts? I asked.
Made their own is more like, Dave replied. Might have been on their way somewhere and decided they didn't want to go any further.
Told us they'd shoot us if we didn't leave,
Georgie added with a hiss of pain.
Had fancy weapons, like yours. I thought maybe you were heading there to join them,
Georgie said as he eyed me.
No, I said. We're trying to get to Yorkshire, but first we have to stop in Lincoln. That's why we're on the A-15.
Well, you won't make it this way, Dave said. But if you ride with us to Newark, you can pick up the 46. That takes you straight to Lincoln.
Let me ask my friends, I said.
Though, if what you say is true, it sounds like we'll be riding with the Winos Club to Newark.
Dave grinned, and I grinned back. When the leader turned to deal with the recalcitrant Georgie, who still insisted he could ride, I went to find my two lovers. The girls were near our bikes and had set up a Tylenol dispensary of sorts. Injured bikers were each given a couple of tablets and a swig from a bottle of cheap whiskey and then told to move on.
You should ride with us, I heard one of the bikers say. You obviously know how to find the important things.
Keep it moving,
Becca said, as she ignored the biker and handed the woman behind him two Tylenol and the bottle.
I was talking to Dave, I said as I joined them.
Dave?
Haywan asked.
Our leader,
the woman said as she handed the bottle back to Becca and then tugged her partner away. I waited until all of the Winos Club had been served, then I dropped my voice to make sure we weren't overheard.
Dave says that Holdingham has been taken over by soldiers, and they're not letting anyone through, I explained.
Where is Holdingham?
Haywan asked.
Just north of here,
Becca replied.
It's where the highways connect to each other.
Well, apparently they're not letting anyone use any of the highways around there, I said.
Then what are we going to do?
Haywan asked.
Is there some way to get to Lincoln without going through Holdingham?
Dave said we could ride with the Winos Club to Newark, and from there we would have a straight shot to Lincoln, I replied.
Yeah,
Becca said, as she squinted.
I think that's right. I don't know the roads around here quite so well, but we could check one of the map services.
Do it, I said. Haywan pulled her phone from her pocket, and after a few quick taps, she nodded.
I found an old page because I'm having problems connecting, but there is an A-46 that runs from Newark to Lincoln, and we're close to the road that would take us to the A-1, which is what we need to take to get to Newark. Should we do it?
Becca asked.
Should we ride with a biker gang? What if they murder us and steal our stuff?
I think we can trust them, I said. And it might be safer to travel with a large group, at least until we reach Newark. Maybe we can find a place to spend the night once we get there.
I guess this means we are not going to reach Scampton today,
Haywan noted. Probably not, I admitted, as I looked for the sun. We've already lost a lot of time, and we're still only halfway there. And now we have to go around these soldiers in Holdingham.
I wonder what the military is doing in Holdingham,
Becca mused. I don't know, and I don't care. If we go there, we'll probably just get roped into some other assignment before we've even finished the one we're supposed to be on. I say we stay with the Winos Club and head to Newark. Tomorrow, we'll head to Scampton, drop off the briefcase, and see how much closer we can get to Yorkshire. Becca cast a doubtful glance toward our new companions, but Haywan looked happy at the idea of joining a biker gang, even if it was only for a short ride.
You were just handing them Tylenol and whiskey, I pointed out when Becca shook her head.
But I didn't think we'd be spending the rest of the day with them,
she complained.
Don't be silly,
Heiwan replied.
They're the same nice people we just helped, and now they help us. I think we should go with them.
That's two votes for and one against, I said. I guess we're riding with the Winos Club.
Well, maybe I can talk one of them out of a jacket. I mean, if we pretend we belong to the Winos Club, no one will mess with us, right?
Well, no one human, I laughed.
Just wait until you tell your mother that not only did you ride a motorbike, but you were part of a gang.
Heiwan added.
Oh no, this is one part of the story we are not telling my mother.
I'm going to have to start keeping notes on what we can and cannot tell your mother. Becca rolled her eyes, but I left the girls to repack our bikes while I walked back to Dave to give him our decision. I saw that Georgie was on the back of one of the bikes while the heavily pierced girl hovered nearby, and Dave and two other members seemed to be discussing the best way to distribute the riders among the surviving bikes.
So, will you be riding with us? Dave asked when he saw me approaching.
We will, I said, at least to Newark.
We just need to get Georgie set, and then we'll be off, Dave replied. So go ahead and mount up.
I nodded and walked back to our own bikes. The girls had everything secured by then, and we climbed back on board while the Winos Club sorted out their rides. When everyone was set, Dave gave a signal and the motorbike started down the highway. It was loud, dirty, and guaranteed to draw attention, but at least we would look cool when it did.